Oh boy, expensive buyout in Minnesota. That is the new headline story here on Hockey Central. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart. Ken Holland, Oilers general manager, talks to us about the Duncan Keith trade, which went down yesterday. That's coming up in a couple of moments. Meanwhile, boy, this one is a whopper. And it seems like just yesterday, doesn't it, Stewie, that the $200 million was spent on two hockey players that were going to take the Minnesota Wild to uncharted territory and hopefully bring the Stanley Cup to Minnesota? That didn't happen. And today, according to reports from Mike Russo of The Athletic, both are getting bought out. And for the next 4 years, it's super expensive on that cap. Each player, okay, each 2.3, then 6.3, then 2 years of 7.3, and then the remaining 4 years, $833,000 each. So in years three and four, you're looking at $15 million of dead cap space. We knew this summer was going to be a crazy one. We knew there was going to be twists and turns and surprises. And Stewie, this one already has an epic surprise attached to it. I don't think any of us saw this one coming. Not just one buyout, but two. These guys are supposed to be the Golden Boys once upon a time.
Absolutely not. And I guess that the owner was right when he said that he did go temporarily insane when he did sign those deals. And that was his response when the PA asked him, hey, if you're worried about all this money that everyone's making, why did you sign these deals? But that's just the sign of the times. A lot of these teams now are cash strapped, but I think it's more so to do with the new regime coming in, Bill Guerin coming in, wanting to put his personal touch on the team. So it's very, very tough to have two veteran guys that are very respected within the NHL that are still serviceable players. Suter's still playing 22, 23 minutes a night, probably more. And Parise showed what he can do in the playoffs when he got in. He still can play. So I'm sure they'll go find some good homes and show that they prove that they can still play this game. But for Minnesota, there's some great young players that are coming up. A lot to be excited about, but still a shock throughout the league.
Yeah, that's a good point, Stu, because this really does indicate the changing of the guard, the new regime. This is all about, you know, Kirill Kaprizov and Joel Eriksson-Ek and, you know, Jonas Brodin and Matt Dumba. Speaking of Dumba, you can look at this and say, you know, and Bill Guerin talked about this, you know, there are ways we can do this. There are ways we can protect, you know, someone like Matt Dumba for the expansion draft with Seattle. Well, they just did it. Now, mind you, it was expensive. But this is, to your point, Stewie, the indication that this is a new era of the Minnesota Wild. And they're going young. Yeah. And you know, we saw this last year. They've actually become an exciting hockey team to watch. And now they're getting rid of the old regime, albeit in a very expensive way.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think if they didn't have that success that they did this past season, I think this move would be very tough to move to make. But I think they can sell that the future is bright because they have these young guys stepping in. They have a stud in Dumba right now, too. They got some great goaltending. So the future is going to be bright. But any way you dice it, nobody had this on their bingo card. Suter and Parise getting bought out.
You know, I wonder how that conversation goes too, Stewie. I remember Doug McLean, when we worked with him, would always talk about, you know, the conversations with the owner when you want to say, look, we got to submarine some money here. Like, you're Bill Guerin and you're going to Craig Leopold and you're saying, look, here's what we need to do with these contracts. We need to buy them out. Essentially, we need to eat a lot of money. That's going to cost you, your pocketbook, and my cap space, but we need to do it for this team. That is an awkward conversation with an owner, especially right now in a time where everyone's getting hammered, not just in their hockey business, but their primary business too.
Absolutely. And I think there's some other players now and some other teams now that are going to be looking at their rosters a lot closer now, saying if Minnesota Wild can do it, maybe we can do it too. But the other thing with Craig Leopold, he's one of the few owners that are really, really close with the players. A lot of the players are over at his house. He has a great connection. My brother was there in Minnesota for a couple seasons. So I'm sure this move was very, very hard on him. But at the end of the day, business is business. So I don't want to hear the fans now saying this guy sat out for extra money, because the business side goes both ways.
And if it wasn't for the Minnesota Wild story right now, buying out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, the headline story, which is still a headline, certainly in Edmonton and across the country here, is the Duncan Keith trade. He now finds himself a member of the Edmonton Oilers. Ken Holland is the GM of the Edmonton Oilers. He joins us now on Hockey Central. Ken, good afternoon. How are you today?
Good. Nice to be with you.
The pleasure is ours, and I know you can't comment on other players, so I'm not going to ask you to, but the Minnesota Wild news is surprising. We thought this was going to be a Wild offseason. This is a big explosion that goes off in Minnesota. Going into this offseason, Ken, did you say to yourself, as many of us have, that this is going to be one of the craziest offseasons this sport has seen in who knows how long, a couple of decades perhaps?
Well, I mean, it's an unknown. I think coming out of the pandemic, you know, obviously last year, you know, it was a quiet off season. You know, you look back to free agency, with the flat cap. I think there's more optimism, you know, all over because of, you know, appear to be heading out of the pandemic. There's still lots of work to do, but I think from a business standpoint, certainly we're optimistic that we're going to be able to play games and have fans. So I think that optimism and having being able to have fans leads to decisions. Also, a flat cap leads to difficult decisions. You know, when you look at, you know, normally the cap was going up, you know, from 81, they supposed to go up to probably 84, 85 last year, and probably going to go up to 90 this year if there wasn't a pandemic. So all those things affect how people do their business.
We were just talking a couple of seconds ago, and we're going to get to the Duncan Keith trade in a second, but just the nature of how a general manager talks to his owner about sinking money. And it must have been an awkward conversation that Bill Guerin had with Craig Leopold when they made this decision with Parisi and Suter, which is now, by the way, official for all of our listeners. From a GM's point of view, how awkward are those conversations when you go to the owner and talk about, we need to bury some of your money?
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's not really buried because it's against your cap. So, you know, you've got a cap at 81.5, and when you buy players out, that buyout money goes against the 81.5. So I think, you know, certainly you're spending money that you're probably going to spend anyways, but you're not getting any value for it. You know, I certainly look back to my days in Detroit and had to buy out some players at different times for a variety of reasons. And I think ultimately, you know, they're difficult decisions, but they're important. They're difficult conversations, but they're important conversations. And, you know, the owners, the general managers and the people inside the business have, you know, more information than the people outside. So, you know, when you're making these decisions, you know, you've got all the information, and you come to a conclusion, and obviously you got to go to your owner. But ultimately, like I said, it's there's an $81.5 million cap. That money goes inside that cap. Like, it's not like it's you spend 81.5 and then you get to go out and buy people out and you spend more. So, you know, we all get to spend $81.5 million as we see fit, and sometimes you have to buy players out because it's a good business decision, not a bad business decision.
With Ken Holland, general manager of the Edmonton Oilers on Hockey Central. Duncan Keith, we've all watched him play, win Stanley Cups, Olympic medals, Conn Smythe, Norris, all of it. The resume is outstanding. It leads right to the Hall of Fame. It leads us to say things like he's the best defenseman the Chicago Blackhawks have ever had, and now he's yours. I'm curious where that thought bubble that Duncan Keith could be an Oiler first appeared for Ken Holland. Was it his play against you guys in the bubble? Was it before that? Was it after that? Maybe take us back to the moment you said, if we can get our hands on this guy, I'm going to go for it.
Probably when I got the call from Stan Bowman, you know, to say that he had a conversation with Duncan. He gave me permission to talk to Duncan. Got a new agent, Jerry Johansson. Mm-hmm. He gave me permission to talk to Jerry Johansson. And you know, I told him I wanted to think about it. And I would say probably, I don't know if it's a good couple of weeks, two and a half, 3 weeks. And over the course of that time, you know, talked to Dave Tippett multiple times, talked to our, you know, defense coach Jim Playfair. We got Ken Hitchcock on staff as a, you know, as an advisor who's one of the winningest coaches in the National Hockey League. And, you know, then talk to my people, you know, my assistant manager Keith Gretzky and my analytics guy Justin Mahi, the department. They run numbers and talk to my pro scouting department Archie Henderson and what they see with their eyes and the reports and eventually after a process made a decision, you know, and that would be on the heels of probably at the end of the season. You know, what I've done for 25 years as a manager, have exit interviews with all the players and the younger players on the team. You know, tell them what we think, I think that they need to do to be ready for the next season. And it's an opportunity at the end of the year when I talk to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Darnell Nurse and Adam Larson and Mike Smith, gathering information of what they think of our team and the things that we need. After that process, basically made a decision that I thought Duncan Keith would be a real good addition to our hockey team.
So would you have, just for clarity's sake, would you have asked your key players their thoughts on that player specifically, or more, here are the needs that we have, here are the holes?
No, I asked them specifically.
Okay. Stewie.
Ken, is there a frustration with the analytic critics that aren't in-house that are sort of, you know, putting out a bar graph or a heat map saying this is a wrong move? Could you talk about his intangibles and what you think makes him a great fit for this Edmonton roster?
Well, I mean, first off, I would say to you, we need passion. The passion of the fans, the passion of the media, the passion is what makes our business go, which is what makes any business go. So, you know, do I get frustrated? No, I we need the passion. We need the fans. It's what makes our business go. So, you know, I think that at the end of the day, like I said, you know, I've kind of weighed all that information, the analytics and the numbers, and I reflect back on my time. I reflect back on my time in Detroit, and I know it's a different time, but. You know, and I look at the teams around the league. You know, you look at Tampa Bay, and you look, you know, Montreal went to the Stanley Cup Finals, and you look at the importance of veterans and the importance of leadership. And you know, you can't put a price on it. You don't know what it's worth. So at the end of the day, in this deal, you know, I looked at what Duncan Keith meant to the Chicago Blackhawks for a long time. You know, his status in the I obviously played against him many, many times with being in Detroit. He was in Chicago. He had a playoff series with them in 2013. I know he's 37 years of age. I talked to people around the league and had our people, you know, Dave Tippett and Jim Playfair and Ken Hitchcock. We talked to people around the league. I talked to some of Duncan's teammates and we put together, you know, an understanding of Duncan Keith. He's a totally committed athlete in the summer to training. You know, he's well respected. He comes to the rink every day. He's a proud guy, and he's determined to have an impact, a positive impact on the hockey team. So, you know, I certainly know he's 37 years of age. We gave up a young defenseman in Caleb Jones. You know, he's 23, 24 years of age, just hasn't been able to kind of grab an everyday job in Edmonton this past year. And a third round draft pick certainly took on a higher cap number. But if the cap, you know, Stan Bowman and I had these conversations, if I wanted to get the cap reduced, I would have to spend more assets. So at the end of the day, it's either you're taking on a bigger cap or you're putting more picks or better young players into the deal to get the deal done. So, you know, so we got the deal done, and I believe Duncan Keith can come here and be a second pair defenseman. His role is going to be a little bit different. Obviously, he's been a number one guy in Chicago. Darnell Nurse has that role here, so he's going to have a reduced role. And I reflect back on bringing in, you know, old players like Brett Hull and Luke Robitaille and Dominic Hasek and Chris Chelios and Mike Modano and the impact that they have on the other players in the locker room. And so I obviously through that whole process, through that whole evaluation, and ultimately my gut instincts went ahead and made the deal that we made yesterday.
You know, it's I'm curious about your conversation with Dave Tippett about Duncan Keith, and you know, ultimately it'll be your head coach's decision, but who he gets paired with. And it would seem like perhaps, Ken, the obvious one is Adam Larson. Does that make some sense? And is there any update on the Larson negotiation?
Adam's unrestricted. I think that we see that. Our hope is to re-sign Adam. I've had lots of talks with JP Berry's agent since going back to probably, I don't know, February. We started. I think at this stage of the game, kind of get the sense that, you know, we're probably 2 weeks away from, 28th, kind of two weeks away from free agency, or thereabouts, 2.5 weeks. So I think there's a possibility that he exposed the market. Hopefully we find a way to keep him. Certainly that's my goal, is to keep Adam Larson in an Oiler uniform.
If that doesn't happen,
if he do get him signed, certainly we would see that as a pair. I think that Duncan and Adam, we would see that as a second pair if we could get Adam Larson re-signed.
It does make sense. If it doesn't happen, do you have an internal answer to that question of who plays with Duncan Keith, or is that something you'd have to look for in the market?
Well, I mean, we've got two other right-shot defensemen, young defensemen, Ethan Bear and Evan Bouchard. You know, Evan Bouchard's going to be one of our six. You know, he was patient last year. He's the 10th pick in the draft a few years ago. He's got tremendous potential. You know, had a real good year 2 years ago in Bakersfield as a first-year pro, and then this year was, you know, played 10, 15 games, and Bouchard's moving into the lineup. So certainly, you know, if you look at our three right-shot defensemen, Bear played with Darnell Nurse 2 years ago in a pair, and then last year was Tyson Berry, and Ethan was playing with different people. So we have two right-shot defensemen, obviously Ethan Bear and Evan Bouchard. But I do need to go find one more right shot defenseman for sure. And there's Tyson Berry that had a tremendous year with us. So, you know, I knew it was impossible to bring back both Berry and Larson and Bear and Bouchard. I mean, they all want to play. They all deserve to play, and they all need to play. So we'll see. I mean, we're a work in progress. So we do have some young defensemen internally, but I know that we need to bring on another defenseman or two.
Jesse Puljujärvi took the next step in his development, scoring 15 goals in 55 games. Where do you see his ceiling is, and where do you think he needs to grow in his game in these coming seasons?
Well, Jesse was a real good story for us. I think at the end of he's a big, strong, powerful man, 6'4". He's a presence, and I didn't really watch Jesse a lot in his draft year because he was going the top four. I don't know where we were picking, but we weren't in Detroit when I was there. We weren't picking there, so you know, I just kind of watched some video and talked to some people. And what I liked about him when he got here is he played a North American game. He played a North-South game. He was getting in on the forecheck. He was going to the blue paint. He pursued the puck. You know, he had 15 goals in, 56 games. I think, you know, you put that over 82 games. It's about, 20 goals thereabouts, maybe a couple more. You know, I think... You know, he didn't play on the power play. You score 20 goals in the National Hockey League on a regular basis, you know, 5-on-5, that's a lot of goals. So if he can just continue to do what he's doing, we'll be thrilled. I mean, he developed into a top six forward. He started out in the third line the first five, six games. I remember the night in Winnipeg that Dave Tippett moved him up to the first line, and certainly as we were jumped on the plane flying home, you know, I thought he was maybe one of our best players, if not our best forward that night. He was a great story, and from them he just sort of took off, and you could see his confidence grow and the coach's confidence grow in him. So, you know, he's going to be a big part of our team. Like I said, he's big and strong, powerful, and I just think that he just needs to continue to keep doing what he's doing, because he's playing a North American style game. It's a North game, South game. He's getting into the forecheck. He's going to the blue paint, and you know, some of the little details work that helps an athlete go to the next level. He's working on, and you know, he's an important guy. He's an important guy for our team.
Have a question about the marketplace itself, and I'll use the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins deal, Ken, as a jump-off point for it. It's an 8-year contract for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins at a really nice number that a lot of people look at and say, this is the player taking security, taking term over just trying to hit a financial home run for a couple of seasons. We saw Joel Eriksson-Ek do the same thing with the Minnesota Wild. From your read of the marketplace, do you see that happening more with players that they want the security of term more than the big financial home run right away?
Well, you know, I mean, I think Eck was restricted. You know, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, you know, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, and normally, when unrestricted free agents either get too much term or they get caps too. I mean, they're unrestricted. They're free. There's a bidding war going on. There's a bidding war going on. So, I think that, you know, now you're in a flat cap world, you know, so it doesn't appear the cap. Nobody knows when the cap's going to go. I'm not saying it's not going to move $1 million or something, but you know, the moves, the regular moves, the $4 and $5 and $6 million a year that's been going on that had gone on since the cap was implemented in 2005, 2006. Nobody knows when that's going to happen, because obviously the losses have to be squared off and the escrow paid back. So, you know, Nugent, that's the conversation I got in with Rick Follette, Nugent Hopkins' agent. And ultimately, you know, I got a cap number I liked, and he got 8 years. But you know, if you want to sit around and think that I'm gonna piddle around on a 3 or a 4 year deal in the fives, the player's gonna go to market, and then now you run the risk of losing important players. So I think that you have to make decisions, and you know, for me, Ryan Nugent Hopkins is 28. You know, he can play left wing, he can play center, he's versatile, he's popular in the locker room, he's respected, he can kill penalties. And he's smart. He's smart. He's always going to be a good player on the power play because he's smart. He's patient. So, you know, I think that probably at the end of the day, Rick Follette, he didn't like the cap number going down, and I probably didn't like putting 8 years on the board. But it's a solution that we can both live with. And at the end of the day, I've got to find, when you're a manager, you've got to find solutions, and you've got to find ways to get people signed, or they go elsewhere.
Ken, we're out of time. We always appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much for doing this, and best of luck in what's looking to be one of the crazier off seasons we've seen. Best of luck in it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
There is Ken Holland, general manager of the Edmonton Oilers. Yesterday, the Duncan Keith deal, that's the primary going to Edmonton, the primary going to the Chicago Blackhawks, along with a conditional pick. Is Caleb Jones, Stewie, brother of Seth Jones, where there is a growing speculation that Chicago would like, amongst other things, Caleb Jones to work as a magnet for his brother. Now, not exactly a secret that Chicago would like to do something with their blue line, whether it's Seth Jones, whether it's Dougie Hamilton, whatever. But you wonder if, how much of a lure do you think that is for Seth Jones? I mean, listen, you played in a league where your brother was out there too. Were you guys magnets for each other at any point?
I've played one shift with my brother in junior, and I played one bio steel camp with my brother, And I'm probably the wrong guy to ask. I never want to play with my brother because he's crying, pass the puck, make some plays. You're not playing the game the right way. So it could be a little bit frustrating. So I understand there's a business side to it too. But if I'm Seth Jones, it's a whole different stratosphere. I think right now he's probably going for the money and the most money. So as much as you want to play for your brother, you got to respect the business side of it. I could see him going somewhere other than Chicago.
What do you make of the Keith deal? Stewie, I mean, you brought it up. Like, a lot of people, specifically online, are hammering it. I still have a hard time with the salary retention, like Chicago not holding back any salary. Ken's answer to that, as you just heard, was, well, then the price would have been more. And, you know, is that Carney for we didn't want to let go of Ryan McLeod, that he's a big piece of this organization and that's who Chicago was asking for? I don't know, but those rumors are out there. What do you make of the whole thing?
Well, the key piece of information that I got from Ken Holland in describing what happened with the deal, they pulled the players, and the players had input on what does this team need. And when you're bringing in a Duncan Keith, you're bringing a guy that has experience, that's won Stanley Cup, that has a winning pedigree, and sometimes that's a missing recipe or the missing piece of the puzzle that a team needs to help get over the top. So I just don't like the fact that you have the analytic critics, and they're coming in, they're slapping down their charts, and they're literally laughing in a condescending tone, saying, yeah, this deal's awful, brutal, brutal, brutal. These are the same people that were mentioning, you know what, Weber's over the hill, Montreal is going to be brutal. And then when the numbers don't really connect, they're like, oh, well, it's an outlier. No, it's not the norm, it's an outlier. So we have to wait and see. Is it going to be a good deal? Maybe, maybe not. But I just don't like the fact that everyone's hammering the deal online and disrespecting Kenny Holland, who's been an executive now for how many years? I think he knows a little bit more than some of these people now that have the bar graphs and the heat maps and the spray charts. So I'm not knocking analytics, but you got to be analytics informed, not completely analytics driven. And that's my issue with some of the people criticizing the deal.
All right. So if you missed the news off the top, and we'll try to get someone on tomorrow. I mean, everyone in Minnesota right now is really tied up. And that includes the man that broke the story. And that's Mike Russo of The Athletic, as the Minnesota Wild making official today. They are buying out the contracts of Zach Parise and Ryan Suter. These are whoppers. Now, it does save them money this year on their salary cap, so Bill Guerin can do some things. Years 3 and 4 are going to be awful on these buyouts, with 14.6 and 14.6 of dead cap space sitting there. But
ouch.
Stewie, as we talked about off the top, this is the rebuilding team. This is the... Remember, how many times did we talk this year, Stewie, about how Kirill Kaprizov has changed everything in Minnesota right now? Like the fortunes of Minnesota, the expectations of Minnesota, how we feel about them as a... Like, Kaprizov came in as a rookie this season and changed all of it. And I don't know if this buyout is happening if Kirill Kaprizov doesn't have the season that he has, which, of course, leads to optimism in the marketplace, which leads to Bulgarin saying, we got to get the bungee cords off here. And if we're going to do anything, we got to get rid of some salary and we got to get rid of some players. Now, the question becomes, once you dissect everything that this means for the Minnesota Wild, and they still have a good one of Marco Rossi coming next year, what does this mean for Parise and Suter? And already online, you know what the marriage is?
Don't say Toronto.
Suter and Weber. Back together again.
Yeah. But, Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, too, and then Erickson Ek is taking the next step. Spurgeon's been playing
big
great.
Time.
Dumba's been playing great. Brodin. So this is almost the changing of the guard. They did it a little bit more
totally.
Bolder than some other teams, but I totally respect it because I remember on this program, we were sitting there saying, oh, when is he going to make a move? Guerin, he's just sitting back on his thumbs, not really making a move, and they're not saying that anymore.
Not at all. Bill Guerin, the headline maker today, Parise, Suter bought out by the Minnesota Wild. We'll hit pause. We'll come back with Ryan Clark for The Athletic. He covers the Seattle Kraken. That is a fascinating team right now for all the obvious reasons. We'll get his thoughts as well on the headline story of the day involving the Minnesota Wild and the two big buyouts. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Okay, welcome back to the program. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart. The headline story of the day, the Minnesota Wild buying out Zach Parise and Ryan Suter, which saves them some money now by way of buyout, but there is some long-term pain on the horizon with some dead cap space to the tune of almost $15 million in years 3 and 4. Let's turn our attention now to the Seattle Kraken, who in a lot of ways are the reason for a lot of these deals, as teams try to lean out their rosters and try to make sure that they don't lose players they don't want to lose. And we thought it was all going to be different than when Vegas came in and general manager was just going to say, oh, take the player, we don't care, we're not going to pretzel our organization. Guess again. Ryan Clark covers Seattle for The Athletic. He joins us now. Ryan, how are you today?
Good. How are you two doing?
We're doing well. This is like, everything that's happening right now is all Seattle's fault, right?
If you want to use those words, go for it. But to be serious, people have talked so much about the difference between Vegas and Seattle, much like you talked about, but the great equalizer in all this is the flat cap. I mean, every general manager in the league is trying to find a way to keep the best team possible and reduce the amount of assets they're going to lose, or better yet, if they're going to lose someone, try to get something in return. But this is the reality of the flat cap and the impact it's had, and it's coming right as there's an expansion draft.
You know, and this is leverage time for the Seattle Kraken as well. And this is where Ron Francis can really be, you know, just to be blunt, Ryan, can really be ruthless. And if he doesn't like a price, he doesn't have to pay it. Like, he's got, you know, he's got 31 other general managers in a lot of ways on the hot seat to try to keep their prospects and their players, etc. How ruthless do you think Ron Francis is being right now?
The thing you keep hearing from executives around the league, Jeff, is the asking prices are high.
Yeah.
And Ron Francis is aware of what's going on. So you can pick any team practically, and most of them have some sort of leverage situation, whether it's a situation where they can create a lot of leverage, a little bit of leverage, that all depends. So let's take a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, for example, just because, well, they're one of the most prominent teams in the league that just won a cup and everybody's talking about their cap situation. It is a team that right now, when you look at cap friendly, they're projected to have $85 million shade over in cap space. So they've clearly got to shed something. No matter their protection format, there's going to be RFAs available. Mm-hmm. If you're Ron Francis, you can do a couple things. The first thing you can do is you can look at the Lightning and go, we're just going to take Calfoot. You figure out your own financial mess. We've got a player for the future who we think can play right now, and we'll go about our business. Or if you want to go this route, you could look at them and say, based off the protection method, here are some players that are going to be available. Maybe someone like Andre Palat, Yanni Gourde, Tyler Johnson, Alex Killorn. Those are all options who could be available. If you take one of them, you're alleviating Tampa's financial pressure. But at the same time, like, are you going to do that and not try to get something out of it? But again, that's just a couple of hypotheticals. Who knows what could happen? Because when you look at Tampa's protection format and they go 7-3-1, you have to figure out who you're going to protect between Victor Hedman, Ryan McDonough, Mikhail Sergachev, or Eric Chernak. Or if you decide to go with 8 skaters and protect 4 defensemen, I mean, you run the risk of possibly exposing a forward that you may want to protect, because the thought is you're going to protect Nikita Kucherov, Steven Stamkos, Braden Point, and Anthony Cirelli. So again, these are just the decisions the Lightning have to weigh going forward, as well as the Kraken, and when it comes to looking at what leverage can exist.
Yeah, I think the Vegas Golden Knights, when they're building their team, they did it from the goaltender and defense out. So are there any goaltenders out there that you could see being exposed that could be a, you know, major key building block for the Seattle team?
And why is it Washington?
Sure, Anthony. So, tell you what, let's go ahead and start there. I mean, you look at, let's say, the Washington Capitals and someone like Vitek Vanacek, who, again, had the sort of season that he gave you all the numbers a team would want to see in a young goaltender, the most important number of all. His cap hit is only $716,667. But the question about Vanacek would simply be, if Henrik Lundqvist is healthy, does Vitek Vanacek even make it to the NHL this season? And it's a little bit of the chicken or the egg, and there are people who've raised concerns that, for as good as his numbers were, when you look at his underlying statistics, is he someone who's going to be able to make the exceptional save? So that would be something to worry about. But at the same time, you also do it with the understanding of it was just his rookie year. No first-year player is ever going to really be the finished product. But then when you look around the rest of the league, the Montreal Canadiens have someone in Jake Allen with his $2.875 million cap hit who's available. We started off this segment with Jeff talking about the Wild. Yes, there's going to be some moving parts. But if Kaapo Kakkonen is out there and is available, and at 24 with his cheap cap hit, what's stopping him from being a possibility? Apparently, when it looks like the fact that they're going to go protect Cam Talbot. And so you have all those options. You have what's going on with Chris Driedger in Florida. Does he get moved? Does he not get moved? Because if you're the Panthers and you move him, you're able to provide cost certainty to a team and you can get something in return. It's that rare situation where you might be able to get something in return on your end. Whereas if you let him go to free agency, I mean, do the Kraken take him with their pick? Do they look at someone else from the Panthers? Do they try to go after him? So there's all these different possibilities through the expansion draft. I mean, yes, there's even names like Braden Holtby who are out there too. And not only that, but when you look at what the free agent market could be like, with people like Frederick Anderson, Peter Mrazek, you know, James Reimer, assuming, you know, Mrazek and Reimer don't get re-signed in Carolina or whatever their situation might be, there's going to be options.
Maybe I should have asked you this off the top, Brian, but, and I don't know, I mean, maybe you can do both, I don't know. Does Seattle want to be good next year or in 2025? Like, are they looking to... Hey, listen, Vegas, I still think, was lightning in a bottle, and it just worked and clicked, and they got to the final, and they've been a good team ever since. Normally, you build 5 years out. Is there a feeling in the organization which way they want to go? Because you can go one of two ways. Elliot always tells me he thinks they can go both ways at the same time. What do you think?
Well, the guy who looks like Ted Lasso without the mustache is probably right on that one. no, seriously, Elliot Friedman, every time I see him, I'm just like, how you are a hockey insider and manage Richmond at AFC is the most amazing thing on the face of the earth.
That's awesome.
I'm sure Anthony Stewart's just sitting there like, yeah, you're right. Anyways, but to be serious and not be a complete idiot on national radio and television, the reality, the reality of it is this. Kraken CEO Todd Lewicki said about a week or so ago that they're going to spend to the cap, but they want to be a team that can have sustainable success. And they feel those things can happen. In order for it to happen, yes, it all depends upon the expansion draft, obviously. But not just so much who they take, but how they manage their money. So we had a story in The Athletic yesterday talking to five agents about, hey, what can the Kraken do in free agency? And one of the questions was, what sort of financial leverage do they have right now? And one agent said they are a unicorn. No one can match what they're doing. But again, that all is predicated upon how much money you're spending in the expansion draft, what you want to spend in free agency, plus the long-term view. And if there's one thing about Ron Francis from his time in Carolina that you just look at and see was one of his strengths, it was asset and money management. He treats it as if it is his own money because there's a big picture ahead. And when you look at why the Kraken hired Ron Francis, that's one of those reasons. Another one is this. It was looking at what he did in Carolina and saying, okay, if he did this within a limited scope as it relates to resources, what could he do when he has more at his disposal, knowing that while he has it, he doesn't have to exercise it until need be. So they think they can do both.
Was there any surprise in Kraken land that they ended up hiring Dave Hakstol as their head coach with less than 3.5 years experience with so many veteran coaches out there available?
It was, but at the same time, Anthony, like the breadcrumbs were there in a sense, because one of the things Ron Francis and Ricky Olczyk talked about was they wanted to look at all the candidates possible and within that people that they had interacted with in the past. And of course, when you think about Dave Hakstol and Ron Francis, they were together in a 2009 IHF World Championships for Hockey Canada, an event that Jason Botterill, now the Kraken's assistant GM, well, one of their two assistant GMs, was at as well. So there was a familiarity. But when you look at sort of what the Kraken were seeking, they were seeking someone that had NHL experience, that had, again, success, which Hakstol had with two playoff seasons. But yes, there is going to be that conversation about him in the sense of, okay, how do you prevent what happened in that fourth year in Philadelphia from happening in Seattle? And also, what growth and strides has he made? And from talking to Hakstol, one of the points that they've made is this is a coach who, when you look at his time in Toronto, was able to sit there and learn from Mike Babcock, Sheldon Keefe. He was able to see some things from a different point of view, having been in the chair. But also, it's like Ron Francis has said as well. You're talking about someone who's making a transition from the AHL, excuse me, from college to the NHL, and there was no AHL experience. And all those different things are like they play a role. So, like, for example, when you're in a college schedule, you're playing on weekends and you have the week to train, prepare, game plan, whatever you need to do. In the AHL, NHL, you don't get that kind of time, especially in the NHL, where sometimes you're playing four or five times in a week. You have back-to-backs. There may not be the time for teaching, and also it's the difference of you're the head coach in a college environment where there are student-athletes where the structure is whatever the coach says goes, to the NHL where at the end of the day, yes, you're a coach, but everyone's an adult that has the freedom to say and do what they want to do. So, yes, they think they have the right person with the understanding that he's made those strides.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to Dave Haxtell here, because one of the things that I'm curious about is how much input would he have on who Seattle selects? And there's a couple of obvious ones. Coach James Van Riemsdyk with the Philadelphia Flyers. Coach TJ Oshie with North Dakota. I mean, I'm sure that Ron Francis leans on a lot of people for information, but to your knowledge, how much stroke would Dave Haxtell have when it comes to Ron Francis actually putting this expansion roster together?
Well, they would definitely want to get his input, because you don't want to tell someone, hey, make me a meal, here are the ingredients, and as the chef, you think you're going to make one thing, and turns out you're making something completely different. But also, like, when you look at the fact that they could take advantage of Dave Haxtell's greatest ability, in the sense that this is someone who is constantly looking at film, trying to find all these different things, that's just another set of eyes that you have. But in terms of the players that are out there, I mean, when you look at what James Van Riemsdyk can provide, I mean, he's arguably going to be the premier forward available in the expansion draft. I mean, you're looking at someone who, over an 82-game schedule this year, would have set a career high in points. He set a career high in points per game average, so it's possible. TJ Oshie is the difficult one, because Oshie has publicly said that he would like to stay in D.C. And continue to be part of what they're doing there. And then also, if you're the Kraken, like, here's the other thing about TJ Oshie, and it goes back to something Anthony asked. We were talking about goaltending and we're talking about defense. If you're the Kraken and you're looking at the Washington Capitals, yeah, Vitek Vanacek's out there, but so is a defenseman like Brendan Dillon, who is 30, makes $3.9 million a year, can do some things on the PK, and he's 6'4", 225. And then you have TJ Oshie, which, let's say in this hypothetical, becomes available. He's a consistent player, someone you know can be part of your leadership group, but he's also a 34-year-old who's going to make $5.75 million for the next 4 years. And given everything that we've talked about with remaining financially flexible, like, those are all decisions you have to make. Like, is it more prudent for them to try to go get TJ Oshie if he's exposed? Does it make more sense to get Brendan Dillon because he's somewhere in the middle, of both in terms of age and having a manageable cap hit with term? Or do you go with Vanacek, who's younger, where at $716,667, like, it's a low, low cost. You're going to have team control. But compared to those other two, he's a little bit more of a lesser-known commodity in the sense of what does he look like in the big picture and who is he as a player.
I know it's unfair to compare them to the Vegas Golden Knights, but everyone is, and it's going to be tough to match their success. But do you see Seattle being a playoff team or a playoff contender next season?
It's possible, again, because when you look at some of the players that could be available in the draft, Anthony, like, yes, there's some talent there. And then it all depends upon, like, what happens in free agency. And so, like, let's take yesterday's move with the Edmonton Oilers and the Chicago Blackhawks. Suddenly the Blackhawks have a little bit more of a protection decision to make when it comes to defensemen. But also, you would think that getting Duncan Keith means, hey, Tyson Barrie's about to hit the open market. He is someone who can run a power play, play top 4 minutes, and do all these different things. And so if you're the Kraken, you could take a look at someone like him, and he could help you get into that push of making the playoffs. So, I mean, it appears that way, because the theme that you keep hearing from so many people in this league, execs, agents, even former execs, is the way the rules are now. Expansion teams are built to win right away. This isn't the old days when the Sharks and the Thrashers and all that were coming into the league and they were struggling. Like, this is a league that is aware, hey, we're having ownership groups pay a $650 million buy-in only to tell them you might have to wait at least 5 years to be good. No, it's a business decision to where they're competitive right away.
We wish we had more time. And listen, as expansion draft, NHL draft, free agency, everything is sort of lining up here, Ryan, as this is going to be a one of the more unique off seasons the league has ever seen. I'm sure we'll have you on plenty more here in the weeks and months to come. Thanks so much for doing this. This has got to be a fun team to cover, even though there's no real team yet. Love your work. Continued success, and we'll check in regularly.
You got it. Thank you so much for having me.
There he is, Ryan Clark. Covers the Seattle Kraken for The Athletic, one of the more intriguing teams, and a lot of the moves that we're seeing are a reflection of teams trying to protect their assets before the NHL expansion draft and, of course, as Ryan mentions as well, the flat cap factoring into all of it. We'll take a break. Montreal Canadiens get their man, Dom Ducharme. We'll talk about that in a couple of moments. Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Quick 60 here before Smith and Jones joins us at the top of the hour here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Stewie, the Montreal Canadiens, no surprise, locking up their head coach, Dom Ducharme. There was a moment in time when we all thought, including internally in Montreal as well, I would suspect, that everybody was going to be fired. Marc Bergevin was going to go. Dom Ducharme was going to go. Patrick Waugh is making noise. He's coming back. Now, everything's different. It's amazing what winning does. Anyway, Montreal locks up Dom Ducharme. Stewie, it's a 3-year contract. Your thoughts?
I like it. Just the buy-in that this team had, the commitment to defense, and almost, you know, going all the way to the Stanley Cup final. That buy-in showed that he got the voice of the room, and everyone's buying in. Great move by the Montreal Canadiens. Great job.
And how about the injuries as announced by Tampa today? The music says we got to go, but substantial. Holy smokes.